Deuteronomy 15. At the end of every 7 years, you must cancel debts. This is how it is to be done. Every creditor shall cancel the loan he has made to his fellow Israelite. He shall not require payment from his fellow Israelite or brother, because the Lord's time for canceling debts has been proclaimed. You may require payment from a foreigner, but you must cancel any debt your brother owes you. However, there should be no poor among you, for in the land the Lord your God has given you to possess as your inheritance, he will richly bless you. If only you fully obey the Lord your God and are careful to follow all these commandments I'm giving you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised, and you will lend to many nations but borrow from none. You will rule over many nations, but none will rule over you. If there is a poor man among you in your towns of the land the Lord your God has given you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward your poor brother. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend him whatever he needs. Be careful not to harbor this wicked thought. The seventh year, the year for canceling debts, is near, so that you will do not show ill will toward your needy brother and give him nothing. He may then appeal to the Lord against you, and you will be found guilty of sin. Give generously to him, and do so without a grudging heart. Then, because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and everything you put your hand to. There will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed towards your brothers and toward the poor and freely and the needy in your land. If a fellow Hebrew, a man or a woman, sells himself to you and serves you 6 years, in the seventh year you must let him go free. And when you release him, do not send him away empty-handed. Supply him liberally from your flock, your threshing floor, and your winepress. Give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God redeemed you. That is why I give you this command today. But if your servant says to you, I do not want to leave you, because he loves you and your family and is well off with you, then take an awl and push it through his earlobe to the door, and he will become your servant for life. Do the same for your maidservant. Do not consider it a hardship to set your servant free, because his service to you these 6 years has been worth twice as much as that of a hired hand. And the Lord your God will bless you in everything you do. Set apart for the Lord your God every firstborn male of your herds and flocks. Do not put the firstborn of your oxen to work, and do not shear the firstborn of your sheep. Each year, you and your family are to eat them in the presence of the Lord your God at the place he will choose. If an animal has a defect, is lame or blind, or has any serious flaw, you must not sacrifice it to the Lord your God. You are to eat it in your own towns. Both the ceremonially unclean and the clean may eat it, as if it were a gazelle or deer. But you must not eat the blood. Pour it out on the ground like water.
So what have you learned? Absolutely nothing? No, I'm sorry.
We don't do that here.
We don't do that here. Okay.
Borrow from other nations.
Do not what?
Borrow from other nations.
Okay.
Well, it's the basis of until recently, the basis for modern bankruptcy law, even today. I mean, it had been
to
7 years, and then you would be discharged. It's got a lot more complicated recently.
Yes, got a lot more complicated.
It was actually written into our Constitution.
No, it was not. President Harding was the one that instituted it in law.
As far as the bankruptcy
every 7 years.
I was talking about it was in our forefathers' writings, borrow.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
But to lend, you know, if needed, but...
There's one interesting thing I noted. On the one hand, he says in verse 4, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will bless you in the land that he's giving you to possess. But then later on, when you read here in verse 11, he says, for the poor will never cease to be in the land, therefore I command you, you shall open your hand to them freely and give to them in need. You know, on the face of it, it seems like a discrepancy.
A contradiction.
A contradiction. But I thought about it a little bit more. And the thing is that, you know, he says here, the poor will never cease to be in your land. But, you know, if you're generous with them, they will never be so desperately poor that they're, like, you know, eating their own socks or, you know, anything like that. Because in the third world, there are people that are poor. So the idea is that even those people that are the poorest among you should never be so poor and so desperate that they are crying out to God.
Right.
Okay. Against you.
Maybe the Lord knew that the Lord knew that the people would not fulfill this commandment, and that therefore the poor would be always with you. And Yeshua quoted that in Matthew, Mark, and John. The poor you will always have with you. It's almost like it's basically understood that people are not going to be as generous as the Lord is requiring them to be.
I'm sorry.
Right. Was he referring to the poor, though, not being Hebrews, because he was talking in, what is it? Toward the end, it says, 11, it says, I command you to be open-handed toward your brothers and toward the poor and needy in your land.
Right.
He differentiated between the poor and needy.
Yeah.
Who were not Israelites.
Okay.
And
we'll cover a lot of stuff today, aren't we?
Well, this idea of that there will always be poor among you is a sense of what he was talking about earlier, in that a change of heart is needed. Because if you're hard-hearted and tight-fisted, you're not going to be looking out for those people who need help. Right. So it's more of like a change of heart that people need.
Question and comment. Maybe somebody has a Hebrew Bible. The difference between usury and lending. In verse 6, he says, the Lord will bless you so much that thou shalt lend unto many nations, but thou shalt not borrow. But you know how Jesus said that later. What is it? The Jewish people have been, I don't know, Shylock to death or whatever, but the usury thing or the lending to others with interest, is that this kind of lending, or is there a different Hebrew word for lending with usury?
Yeah, not in this particular area. This is just straight lending money only. There is no extra charges.
Just said, you know, lend without asking something in return.
Correct.
I have a Hebrew. In the King James, it's in verse 7, if there be among you a poor man. In verse 7 in the Torah, which is plout as a commentary, it says, if, however, and the comment of that is, if you will not heed God's commandments, then there will be needy among you. In that case, let debt remission, which is still the subject in view, assist your social conscience.
All right, so we're getting where we're going, right there. All right, I wanted to get there. That's an important issue here. Okay, remember I told you that there's a difference between commandments and statutes and judgments. No, we have the Ten Commandments, those thou shalt not, right? But the statutes aren't thou shalt not. The statutes are thou shalt. All right? Now, what was the first statute listed here? Verse 1.
Release of debts. Every 7 years.
Okay. That is a statute. It is a commandment by God. That is an order of doing something and to take charge and doing something. Now, what happens when this is not happening? Okay? This chapter leads up to tell you exactly what happens when that statute is not enforced. All right. Now, always being poor among you does not mean that a person is always going to be poor from the time he's birth until he's 88 years old. Because he's released of the debt every 7 years. So the poor will cease being poor. In fact, yes, technically speaking, it's pretty close. It's within that seventh year. Not necessarily at the end of 7 years. It's within that seven-year time cycle. It's like the person that was being a slave. It's 6 years. A bond servant. And in the seventh year, when you release him, okay, it's like the 6 days thou shalt work, and the seventh day you shall rest. So a base of person will not, who is indentured for 7 years to you, or in this particular case, in the seventh year, you have an option. You can release them. And in that seventh year, that person does not want to be released, then that's something entirely different. All right? So when we talk about the poor, and it says there'll be no poor in your land, why? You know, it's like there's a contradiction of the terminologies here, but he says, if there's always going to be poor, there's always going to be somebody who has had a financial problem in your country, in your world, in your land, in your territory, always, because things happen, right? The crop fails, you know, or perhaps something more serious takes place, and they're needing help. And he says, do not let your, we'll get to the later on, do not let yourself deny helping the person. Because when you loan him the money or loan him whatever it is that you have, you can actually at the point where you will, he will be free of the debt at the end. Because when a person is lent, if you lend a person money, financial money, we'll talk about money for a minute, they're going to be using it, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to stash it. They're going to be using it. All right. And when do you get it paid back? Well, whenever he can, or that person, that woman, can actually build up enough return from whatever you loaned him or her to be able to have and regain self-respect, regain a crop, or regain whatever it is that they need it for.
Whatever agreement you make between.
Well, the agreement's already written here.
Yes.
If the person's desolate, you do not withhold openly. Openly you give to them. Openly you provide for them. Openly you give. There will be no poor in the land. So it's not a contradiction of words. In order to prevent there be no poor in the land, what do? You lend him whatever it needs to be able to get him out of the trouble. And there'll always be somebody who is going to be needing help throughout the years. Not one that's constantly in need every single day of their life. Now, we're not talking about someone. Be careful here with the Torah. Torah is not talking about someone who stands in the street corner and is poor and is out there and that's what he does for a living. They get $300 to $400 a day sometimes and they don't pay taxes, they get nothing. They walk, they look poor and they bring in all this money. No, that's thievery. All right, that's not lending them anything. This is not talking about giving to the poor on the streets. This is talking about lending something to somebody specifically. All right, this is what the statute's about. It's a good statute because if this statute's enforced, there'll be no poor in the land. That is, poor, poverty-stricken people. They will be delivered out of it because you will deliver them out of it. Why?
Yeah, I think some people sometimes have the idea that there should be rich and slightly less rich, but there shouldn't be any such thing as different levels of
poverty line.
Of monetary means or whatever, that we all should be exactly the same. And they want to use the force of law to force that. But the thing is that I think about our country, for example, and for all the ills of our country, you know, and all the things our country does wrong, and it does plenty of stuff wrong. The thing is that even I saw this survey some time ago that even those people that we would consider poor, that are below poverty level, whatever that is, below X number of income a year, I think like let's say below $20,000 of income for a family of four. I think that's the level now for really, really poor, quote unquote, in our country. Most of them own their own home. Most of them have a TV. Most of them have, pretty much all of them have indoor plumbing, these kind of things. So
they're not poverty stricken.
They're not poverty stricken. Right. Like, in some place in third world countries where they don't have running water or whatever, they're not by that definition of poor at all.
Correct.
We don't really have that in our country.
We don't have that in our country. Now we have people who choose to be poor. That's something entirely different. Okay. And there are people who are made poor by the actions of somebody else. All right. But they didn't become poor because they chose to be poor. In those cases, they became poor of the land. And guess what you're supposed to do?
Help them out.
Bail them out. Now, it's only a 7-year contract, quote, contract, in a quote. No, you already helped them for 7 years, basically, it boils down to. Because then that means the debt is canceled and it's finished and they'll be on their own. All right? So we look at the law and the statutes. It's a very, very good statute. Now, let's listen to it. At the end of every, or at the end of 7 years, you shall grant a release of debt. So you grant a release. It's a legal term, by the way. So, quote, if you wrote down a contract on a piece of paper or parchment or a cowhide, at the end of 7 years, guess what you're supposed to do? Release the debt. And he's got record that you don't owe him anymore. All right? All right? That's what you do. He says, every creditor who has lent to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not require it of his neighbor or his brother. Why? Because it's what? Why?
Called the Lord's release.
That's right. This is not one that Moses made up. It's not the one that our Constitution made up. It's not what we made up. It's a statute of God. He says, this is my release. I am releasing them. How does God release you? Basically, pay attention to your life. Maybe every seven years, you gotta change something in your life. And God says, I'm going to release you of this one. I'm going to release you of that one. But he may not release you until 6 years are finished. And the seventh year, he says, okay, now I'm going to take away the debt. It's kind of like a seed out of the hand of God sometimes in our lives. We take a look at it. All right? Because some of us, I know, have had long years of trials. And then all of a sudden it just goes away. We think, well, fine, I listened to God. Well, probably it's true. But also, it's a year that God also releases. God releases an awful lot. Now, he's not on a time cycle of, you know, he's on an individual time cycle. All right, it's like you, if you had someone who was poverty stricken because of calamity that took place, and let's say it's the third year, you're supposed to release him when? 7 years later? No. On the year that God says, this is the year you release it. And if it's in the short of that one short period of time, you say, we'll get to the evil eye in a minute. And you say, well, I'll wait. I'll wait until the seventh year of release is canceled or over with. Then I'll come up and I'll loan you money. Now listen to what God says.
Quick question, Richard.
Yes.
Where do we find the cycle for the 7 years then? Are you saying the 7 years doesn't start from the time of despair or from the time of loss?
No, no.
There's already a 7-year cycle.
It's a 7-year cycle that he establishes. All right. A lot of people try to bring in their own kind, but it's not exactly how God has it. It is how he plans to do that, because that's his release. All right, when those 7 years time cycles has to go from county to the Jubilee years. Okay. We're not, yeah. Well, 50 years entirely, something there. We're talking about a cycle that goes through the series of 50 years. So you have to kind of go back in history, figure out when was the last 50-year Jubilee in recorded history, and then you got that pattern going. All right?
It's really kind of cool because you end up with seven releases during that time period.
Correct. All right. No, that's how God thinks. that's his thinking. It's not ours, it's his. Okay? And if we say we want to love the Lord our God with all our heart, all our minds, all our soul, we're going to say, I have to do what? Oh, I guess I'll do it. But you want to do it not because the commandment alone says so. Because why does he have this commandment written down? For a blessing. You learn to give blessings to those who do not have, as God gives blessings to you that you don't have. On a spiritual level as well as physical level. Now, why not a foreigner?
It's not part of it.
No, why not?
It's the foreigner or the nohri is not part of the community. He's a tradesman, he's a visitor, he doesn't dwell with you. He's not part of the social order.
Yeah, and so you can hold the debt on him forever, right?
He's not part.
However, there is a clause.
He's not part of the covenant.
Not part of the covenant. However, if he chooses to become a part of the covenant.
Well, then that's different.
Oh, we got another story here all of a sudden, because the same law must apply to him as it applies to you. Yes.
Well, I mean, we see it today with people who hop borders to take advantage of benefits. You know, for example,
people
in the United States go to Canada because they have a better system. You know, yeah, exactly. So you could have people in Moab or Syria
right
down here. Oh, yeah, I just get a loan in Israel.
There you go.
I'm doing great.
Yeah. But on the other hand, that foreigner would say, you know, that's not a bad idea. I think I'll go live and move my whole family into Israel.
Yeah.
And become part of them because, hey, I won't have this economic problem anymore. And all the people around about me would be just like me, and I'll be just like them. But see, in your own foreign country, guess what? If you have, you have. If you have it, you have it. It's a have or have not person. That's not in the land of Israel, yes.
That's part of what I saw when he was talking about the poor will never cease to be among you. Not that there will be people among them becoming poor, but more that the way, you know, if they offer it, people will be drawn to be with them regardless of financial status. So there will always be someone to help, it would seem.
But it would depend on whether or not the people coming to dwell in Israel were willing to accept Yahweh as God. I mean, there's right now in history that you can look at Great Britain, right, with its complete social service society, and all of the national, other nations coming to dwell in England, the Muslims, the Hindus, you name it, everything under the sun, drawing from the society, but not putting anything back into it. And
right.
It is a complete and utter mess.
And our country is coming that way.
We just voted English last week as not being the primary language of the U.S. of A.
I want to go to verse 4. I want to go to verse 4. Same, our very same thought that we're talking about right now. Remember talking about the foreigner. Okay, now verse 4 it says, there will be no poor among you, for the Lord will greatly bless you in the land which the Lord your God has given you to possess as an inheritance. The reason why there won't be any poor in your land. And so it's not a contradiction to terminologies. The reason why is because if you go into this land, which I'm going to give you, remember I said before, they have not yet crossed the Jordan River, have they?
No.
Okay, quote, have not yet been baptized, end quote. All right? Now, when they go into or pass through the Jordan River, they're on the promised land, right? But in the promised land, what they have to do to make it remain a promised land? That's one of the things right here, right? Every 7 years you shall. So when you enter into the realm of the eternal creator of heaven and earth, he has things he wants you to do. Because he have not entered in yet, right? According here, we know in the book of Deuteronomy. So Moses given tremendous amount of statutes on how to run their country, how to be a people, how to be a society, how to handle your animals, the crops, the tithes, the firstlings, secondlings. He's covering everything there is when you enter in. So when you were baptized into the body of Christ, guess what you have to do? Oh. I guess I better start listening to what the statutes are saying.
Shema.
Because now, yes, Shema. Now I must institute them. In a lot of world, sometimes, once people say, oh, I'm saved forever. Once saved, always saved. That's not true. Biblical doesn't cover that at all. It says, once you have received salvation, you have to, what did Apostle Paul say? Work out your own salvation
with
much fear and trembling. All right.
What is that? Blessed assurance.
Less assurance. Oh, yeah, right. That's an old one. That's an old one. Yes.
Less assurance is what you have when you work out your own salvation with fear and
faith. Yes.
Well, it's, I think she might be referring to the idea of, like in Hebrews, talks about being able to go before God confidently when you have Messiah as the one who opens the veil for you.
Right.
You have the confidence.
You have the confidence.
Yes.
If you obey.
That's right. If Messiah
is the if, then, and the but.
Actually, no. When a person becomes a Christian, there's no reason for them not to want to obey. Right? Logically.
Right.
You put that package together. The reason why you want to become a Christian is because you don't want to obey sins and transgressions anymore in your life. Right?
Right.
You want to obey something else called righteousness, holiness. That which is sanctified. And God tells you how to sanctify things, right?
Right.
He tells you that you must, we talked about this last week, about the clean and unclean food. Sanctify yourself by using these foods. So what's a job? We have a function to do. And sanctification is nothing but keeping yourself clean, keeping yourself holy. Jeff.
Is that kind of an example like between Israel and the nations as far as what the practices are with canceling debts and such? Another example of like elevating, you know, God's way of doing things above the way the nations do things and showing the distinction between.
That's right. And he wants all Israel to raise up, be elevated high like God is elevated high, soar like an eagle, like God soared like an eagle.
Be a peculiar people.
Huh?
Be a peculiar people.
Yeah, special.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
Don't join the crowd. Right, so if you carefully obey the word your God, Lord your God, to observe with care all these commands I commanded you. All right, now we already covered that part. I want to cover verse 9. Now his translation has it a little bit differently. But in Hebrew, it's pretty strong wording. It's called an evil eye. And that evil is what you would think of being evil. Doing harm to somebody. Doing something that is going to be hurtful to the person. Now listen to this carefully. Beware lest there be a wicked thought in your heart. Okay. We talked about this before, but listen very carefully. Heart saying, the seventh year is a year of release. It is at hand. It's very near. Oh, it's very close. And your eye be evil against your brother, and you give him nothing. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm just holding off for 3 or 4 months here. I'm going to hold off. That's all. He needs 100,000, but hey, look, I'll wait for 3 more months, and I'll give him 100,000. Okay, we'll help you pay you back in 7 years later, right? Well, wait a minute. What does God call that? An evil heart. You go ahead and do harm to your brother by not taking care and providing for him. Now, the evil eye is very fascinating terminology, right? We know that in order to see things very clearly, God gave us 2 eyes, right? We have 2 eyes. We can kind of focus in on something. We can tell a distance where something is at. We have a good judgment of time. The reason why we can drive a car, because we have the ability of judging time, because 2 eyes going. If you had 1 eye going, by the way, you have a hard time seeing the car in front of you or behind you. You have a really, really handicap. Your judgment is really, really poor. So there is an evil eye. Now, Matthew, kind of interesting, though. We won't go there today, but we'll read part of it. Matthew 6 chapter. He says, the light of the body is the eye. Okay, so now when you are going to turn to your brother who is in desperate need of your help, and you have something that you can actually help him out with, and you say, well, no, the seventh year is at hand, that means that your eye is dark. There's no light in it. All right? And here it says, the light of the body is eye. If there is, therefore, if your eye it be single, that your whole body shall be full of light. But if your eye were evil, thy whole body shall be in darkness. So we look at this thing about lending somebody something in relationship to what we're talking about. God refers to the eye being evil or good. Eye is going to be evil. It means there's darkness. All right? And light cannot have company with darkness. All right? So if you have the light, if your eye is full of light, the eye is the light, that means inside of your body, something should come out, and something should show, and something should focus. And what did Jesus say about the trees? You cannot have a tree that produces good and evil. You must have a tree that either produces good or produces evil. You cannot have both. And so this guy, this individual, he said, now I want you to be careful. And he said, now, and he cries out to me against you. And guess what? You're charged with a transgression. Okay? Now remember, we're crossing into and over into the promised land. We're going from the pagan world. We're getting baptized. Now we're in the Christian world. And guess what? What are we supposed to do? Oh, if I do that, I got a sin marked against me. Right there. Does God keep record of sins? He does keep record of sins. It's very clear there in the book of, I think it's Ezekiel, if I'm not mistaken. But he says, you know, if the evil man and his old age repents, I will forget all of his evil. For a righteous man, then he turns and does not, I will forget all of his righteousness. And guess what? He's going to write it down. He's got good memory. He also has the ability to wipe that out of his memory. But see, it's kind of our choice. Do you want God wiping yours out? The things you did that were contrary to him. Do you want him to make sure it's wiped out of his mind? Well, that's what you do. You work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You start saying, oh.
Do you want to choose life?
Choose life, not death. Take a choice, you know. They're entering the promised land here, or you're entering into Christianity now, and all of a sudden you got to choose life or choose death. You walk across that water, guess what? You still have to choose. Okay. When you went to baptism, you still have to choose when you got out. You still have to continue on choosing. Because salvation is a continuous thing. It's not something that has happened. You shall surely give to him, and your heart should not be grieved, upset, troubled, anxious, saying, oh, this is a real bad loss. Because he said, now look, I will bless you if you do this. You shall open your hand wide to your brother and your poor and the need in your land. That's who you open up to. I will say, well, you know, let God bless him. He's way out, right? I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go home, and though I do have could help you out today, I'll go home, though, and I'll pray to the Father that he pulls you out of this trouble you have. See, so I know you have to have some spiritual help here first, because I'm praying for you because you have a problem. Therefore, I'm going to pray to the Father, and he will help you out of this problem. Uh-oh. What happens? You give him what he needs immediately. Then you go home and pray. Thank you, Father, for blessing me so much that I can help this person in the time of need. That's what has to come out of your mouth, right? That's what should come out of your mouth. Because he says, I will bless you. Any more?
In the Hebrew, it says in verse 8, it should read, but thou shalt open, the word is patach, and then patach is repeated. So it should read, thou shalt open, or yes, open. I mean, it's very strong in the
wide.
Hebrew. It's a commandment.
Yeah.
You shall open your hand to him. Yes, open.
Yeah. Don't hold back. Don't be stingy. Don't.
Yeah.
If he needs 20,000, don't give him 5.
Yeah.
Oh, I got it. It's all here. It's right here. There it is. Just for you. Wide open. We don't like to look at it financially speaking because, see, we live in a world that's financial speaking. We say, oh, it's a hardship on me. No, God says, no, it's not going to be a hardship on you because I will do it. I will bless you. You're not, I have I've blessed you now. I'll bless you more. Verse 13 about when you send him away free from you, you shall not let him go empty-handed. He is twice the value of a hired servant. Okay, it means if I was your employee and you come and you work for 8 days, eight hours a day for me, and I give you, let's say, $50 an hour, okay? Just say $50 an hour, okay, and you do it. And then that was a contract, and you, after 1 month later or 3 months later, now the contract's over with. But if she come in and for 7 years had to work for me, she's worth twice as much. Because, see, you are not bounded. You can leave anytime you want. You can stop working for me at the moment. Okay, but a bond person cannot stop. They are bound for 6 years.
Yeah, plus, you know, the difference between paying wages and basically paying room and board, that's all that the indentured servant gets, is basically in exchange for your work for 6-7 years, you know, you get food and a roof over your head.
But the servant, bond servant, is working very hard.
That's right.
The bond servant is not sitting there doing nothing waiting. Oh, they're preparing the food, they're doing the cooking, they're killing they clean the house, they're doing whatever they're commanded to do because they're bonded to you for 7 years.
And not just for 8 hours.
Yeah.
And it's it's not just for 8 hours, it's for whenever is needed at time, point, and do it.
The hardest.
But a hired person, you can terminate anytime you want, or they can leave anytime they want. Yes.
I guess this discussion gets us into the typical thing that gets batted around every so often when everyone talks about the history of slavery in the world, especially in Western culture.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of people who look down their nose and say, well, you know, people got their justification for the horrific treatment of slaves from the Bible. So what is it that the Deuteronomy 15 is actually saying about?
It has nothing to do with that. Has to do with one's a bonded. Well, what's a bonded slave?
Well, bondservant is the one who has chosen to stay after his time is up because he has prospered.
Wait. Okay. Let's go back into something else. Okay, what does the commandment say in the first chapter, first verse?
At the end of every 7 years.
And what happens there?
You shall grant release.
Okay, now. If you put a bond person that you're going to do, and now he is to work for you, suppose he has no place to live, and you work, and you bring him into your household, and you begin to have him, and he work for you. Are you not giving your hand wide open to help him? If you don't have the finances, maybe he just needs a job. Or maybe he needs a place to live. Okay, so now we come into this picture here, because the law is still associated around that first statute, right? Here all we have is the increasing of how you apply it, including with a bond servant. Okay? Now they owe you. If I paid you $20,000, you owe me $20,000 and you have 7 years to pay it off, right? But if you don't have anything and you still need my help, and I can't help you that way, but you become and work for me, you live where I'm at, you do all the cow junk and you do all the dog junk and everything else I don't want to have to handle, and your job do the job. By the way, after 6 years, just like I must release you financially at $20,000, I must release you of the bond. Right? That's what it's all about.
So that's a big difference from what the Bible says and what American slavery was.
Oh, yeah. American slavery was downright horrendously evil.
Yeah. Plus the fact that at the end of the time period, you have to compensate the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go, let them go away with an awful lot.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Twice as much as you would give the hired person. So it'd be, you know, quite something different. When our country first started, there was bond service.
There was
the indentured service, and after 7 years, they released of it, and they were not, they didn't owe the person anything.
Yeah, because as I recall in history, it didn't have to relate to that a lot of people did that to work their passage over.
Yeah, passage over there is a bond, so you're bonded to them. You know, God's not against bonds, be bonded to do something, because if the person who was needed your help, you have to have something in exchange to make sure that he knows that you owe him $20,000, right? So it's like a bill. It's like a debt, a financial debt. Well, same thing, relationship to a bonded servant. There is a written agreement. All right?
And a lot of times at the end of that term, you would also learn a trade.
Yes.
So you were not sent away empty-handed, because before the 7 years you didn't know how to do anything, but at the end of 7 years you would know how to be a blacksmith, or you would know how to be a doctor, or whatever it is that you were trained to do at the end, carpenter or whatever. So you weren't sent away empty-handed. You had a trade under your belt at that point that you can then go and do yourself.
Now, at the end of this chapter, a very interesting part, and I want to cover it because I'm running out of time here, but. It's fascinating about the first male that comes from your herd, from your flock. You shall sanctify, set aside for holiness to the Lord your God, and you shall do no work with that firstborn, nor shear the firstborn of your flock. Verse 20, you and your household shall eat it before the Lord. Now remember, we said there in the Numbers or Leviticus, the first of the born belonged to whom?
God.
Okay, so you don't touch it until God says you can touch it. That's a statute, by the way. Is it a bad statue?
No.
Or is it a blessed statue? Oh, you get
the,
why would you not want this particular, let's say, of cattle, why would you want it to go to work for you?
Because it may be your only one.
It may be what?
It may be your only one for a while.
Okay.
That's true.
What do you do when you work an animal? They become tough.
Yeah.
The meat is tough. Mm-hmm. And you chew like crazy. We have the guy that's meat tenderizer stuff, right? And God says, guess what I'm going to bless you with? I can bless you with, if you obey this statute, I will bless you with nice, tender meat that's going to melt in your mouth. Mm-hmm. However, if you put it to work, guess what? It's going to be tough like all the other stuff. I'm giving you something really nice and soft. Same thing with lamb. Shear that lamb. Guess what? You get the first wool, and the meat is real nice and tender. That's kind of fascinating thing, how God's all bless you with it. But he said, no, it's got a defect. Let's go ahead and eat it. Now, you can't put it to work if it's got a defect. But you can go ahead and eat it. The firstborn, he doesn't want it that's defected. That's not what he said about the tithe, right? The tenth one under, whether it's defected or not, I get. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, not the firstborn. Firstborn, no. It must be perfect. Not because God wants perfection, but he wants to make sure that you have the blessedness to partake of this at the Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Trumpets, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Shavuot. These are the blessings God gives you. But, you know, guess what? We have to participate in bringing it about. Some of you want a blessing from God. Oh, God, bless me with, you know, whatever it is. And he says, okay, this is what I want you to do. Da-da-da, it's all written down. Oh, you know, I have to do something to get a blessing from you? Yeah, you have to do something to get a blessing from me. And I'll provide it for you. Did I not create the animal? Yes, you did. Yeah, I'm giving you a blessing. Take care of my blessing. Take care of the blessing I give you. Because it's going to end up in your favor. The same thing, you start helping somebody, the bond and servant, it's going to end up in your favor. Yes.
Why does it say, it's talking about the firstborn, and then at the appointed time, you can eat it before the Lord, year by year in the place which the Lord chooses. But if there's any defect in it, is lame, blind, has a certain defect, you shall not sacrifice it to the Lord your God.
Right.
That, the tenth one was the sacrificial.
No.
Tenth was the tithe. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Don't get that confused. The
firstborn is...
As belongs sacrifice. To God, all is not necessary, it's sanctified, and yes, it's going to be brought before the Creator, and you thank Him for what He has done. And then you will do what you do with it, like killing an animal a certain way, and making sure that, you know, the blood is spilled here compared to there. What you do, and you get it.
Is this referring to the sacrifices that were given to the...
This is not a sacrifice, the Hebrew word here is not sacrifice like sacrifice of sins.
Right.
Okay.
It's not a sin offering.
It's not a sin offering.
Okay.
It's not a sin offering. Firstborn is not a sin offering. All right.
That has to
be a man. In other words, an awful lot of firstborns. Yes.
Back to that thing where God requires us first. That He has a pattern for that, even in His word. Draw nigh unto Me. First, you can throw the word first in there, but that first has to happen on our part, and then I will draw nigh to you.
Yeah.
He wants to know that we're sincere, that we're serious, and that we're seeking Him first, and then He will bless us.
He will bless you.
Otherwise, we will not appreciate the blessing if we're not doing anything to...
Sometimes we think we earned it.
Right.
That's our dealing, yeah.
I always suggest one young man, and I talk with him. I said, now, I want you to stop and think for a moment. Maybe God took it away. Oh, yeah, because you're not responding. And you know what you're supposed to do. God will take away a blessing.
It's true.
If you ignore Him, regardless how much you love Him, care for Him, cherish Him, but if you ignore His statute, guess what? The blessing is removed.
This is kind of interesting what David mentioned about the firstborn, because you almost have to have trust that there will be a secondborn, so don't touch the firstborn.
But He says, I'll bless you.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to trust.
I'll bless you. Don't worry about it. You'll have more than one.
That He'll bless you with the second one.
Yes. He'll bless you up to nine. And He says, oh, yes.
The thing is, let's apply it today. So, okay, our brothers and sisters in the Lord, our brothers and sisters in our family, somebody that may be poor in our family, open our hands.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you have the opportunity to do so, then do so. I mean, James says the same thing.
But isn't it that we all have opportunity, even though we say, oh, we hold our hands tight, you know. I don't have enough. How can I open my hands?
Well, you know, if you have, you can. If you don't, then you have to offer them something else.
You don't get yourself in debt to help them.
Right.
And where does credit come in here?
I mean, there is no credit.
Can you see, is there somewhere in the scriptures about credit cards?
No.
Not to do, right?
No. The credit card is basically the foreigner. We're borrowing money from the foreigner.
Right.
All right. That boils the bowl down to. You had a hand?
Yeah, you might not have $20,000 in the bank, but if you have one or two and you can give it to somebody, you know.
Especially who needs it.
Someone who needs
it. Basically, you want to help them completely bail out of there.
But you might not be able to, you know, if you know that the person has $100,000 in debt and you've only got $1,000, there's no way you're going to give them.
Oh, no. This is not talking about getting somebody out of debt. This is talking about someone who's been poor. No, you could cancel any kind of debt in this country. It's relatively a piece of cake. You know, like the saying of what Donald Trump said, if you owe the bank $100, you have a problem. But if you owe the bank $500 million, the bank has a problem. And that's the truth. Because they'll never get it out of you. No matter what, they can't put you in jail. You know,
So, you know, the money, financial things are kind of a really stupid thing to think about, but it's there, it's real. You know?
So the commandment is there, but thou shalt not borrow. Okay, verse yeah. 6.
Well, it's not that you thou shalt not borrow. It says that if you do this commandment, if you release the people every 7 years, all right, you will not be in that boat where you have to borrow from a foreigner or from a country. But if you do not fulfill this, you don't fulfill that very first commandment, that very first order, you will have to become a borrower.
Yeah, basically, this is a sense in that if you have everyone looking out for the needs of the desperate needs of the people around them, you won't need foreign aid.
Won't need foreign aid.
That's kind of what I get out of this. You won't need some other country to come in to bail you out because your neighbors are bailing you out if you're
right.
in the trouble.
Right.
So can we find a way to every 7 years release all those that owe us money?
Do people owe you money?
That's what it says in the book.
Don't get this confused with your house. Don't get that confused with your house, because see, that's not going to make you poverty stricken or wealthy. This is a place for you to live.
You mean your
okay? Your mortgage is not in the package, because this has nothing to do with it. Because you are hungry. Sorry,
is this talking about if you see your neighbor hungry and they have no food, that you provide the food?
Oh, right. Because your mortgage is an investment. They're making money on a house. All right, you're making money on a house. You're not losing money on a house. You're making money on the house.
Long term, yes.
Yes, long term, yes.
Well, yeah. There's no such thing. Well, biblically speaking, you never had to pay taxes. There were no biblical taxes. But see, we don't live in the house of Israel, do we?
No.
We live in the house of America. State of California, specifically, and sometimes to the county. Yes.
Again, it's back in the context of a person coming to you in need.
That's what this is about. This is what it's about, yeah.
Not bailing them out of a debt or something.
No.
If they come to you because they don't have and they need, and they're asking you for help.
Right.
And that help is going to be for them.
Or you simply see someone who needs help.
Yeah. No, they have to kind of, you got to make sure it's not a foreigner. Because then you charge them.
Well, I'm just saying. I'm like,
yes, I understand.
To be able to see that, you would have to know the person. Have it.
Oh, yeah. You have to do the investigating.
Yeah.
You have to find out whether or not really a person really is that way. I mean, don't be...
be wise with it, too, because you can give somebody and enable them to be poor.
There's a statement on the stock market. When the stocks drop at a rapid pace, don't try to catch a knife on its way down. Well, same thing with a person who is poverty stricken. If he's already on the way down, you're not going to stop him. He's going to go down. It's like you're going to get yourself hurt. You would be in the bankruptcy yourself. You have to use wisdom and think who and what you're talking about. I think she had a question first.
Well, I've been studying Deuteronomy 28 for a while, and it says that if you are a doer of the word, all these blessings will chase you down and overtake you.
Right.
You know, wealth, health, all of it. If you're not a doer of the word, then all these curses
are going to take over.
Yeah, slowly. They're going to come slowly.
Right. He says that because he's very patient God.
My question is this. If a person is in poverty and lost their health and everything because they have become rebellious and not a doer of the word, then we need to really hear from God.
Yes.
Because we might get in God's way.
I have no argument with that at all. Okay, I have no argument with that at all. We're talking about this law says here today. We understand this point, yes.
This was kind of going back to this point about, you know, about having an evil eye.
Yes.
It's basically with this and anything else, don't look for the loophole.
Okay? Don't look for
the
loophole.
Yeah, God doesn't, you know, because your heart, if your heart is always looking for a loophole, you're not.
Then there's evil in there.
Yeah, you're not the same
people. There's, I'm going to do harm to you because I got a little loophole to protect myself.
Like, okay.
I'm looking out for myself first and you're second.
Yeah.
When you already have all that you need, and this person just needs to get out of trouble.
You know, does that kind of also fall upon the, in the sense of that the letter of the law can kill? Because if you're so obsessed with the letter of the law, You're not actually.
Okay. The play on words, yes, that will work. Okay. Yeah. I'm not getting to that one right away.
Today.
But so the spirit of law is the spirit.
Yes.
What does the spirit of law tell you to do?
Be generous.
Release.
Open your hand.
Release. The first thing it says, release. Don't hold on to. Don't hold your brother accountable. Don't hold your brother to the point where they cannot survive. Release them. That's what the law says. That's the first the spiritual concept of thing. That includes if someone has done something hurtful to you inside of you. Now, what did Jesus say to Apostle Peter? Said, seven times a day?
70 times 7.
Completely release it. Well, that's not every 7 years, is it? It's that day. Because that's how God is. Okay? So someone does harm against you, does evil against you, you could, quote, make them pay, can't you? By being evil yourself and wanting to get back at them. On a spiritual concept. Now, we talk here in the physical here for a minute. Any more questions? My time's up. Long time up.
Yeah, can I have one question, Richard? It says, within your gates you are to eat it, the unclean and the clean together. This concept of ritually clean and ritually unclean.
Correct.
Why can the ritually unclean as well as the ritually clean eat it?
Because they're not in the sanctificated area.
Oh, okay.
Okay. They're not in the house of God. They're not in the temple. They're not in the tabernacle. They're not in that presence where God has said, I want you to come to me. When you go into God's presence, then you must be holy.
All right.
Then you must be clean. So then you bring in, and then you might have to eat. You don't walk into the house of God unclean.
But it does say, thou shalt eat it before the Lord thy God, year by year, in the place which the Lord shall choose.
That's right.
Thou and thy household.
That's right. That's when he called, in the place where he has placed his name, or where he has called you to be. Now, the unbelief, the ones that the animal is not pure. Now, you can eat it in your own gates, not my gate.
Gates.
Don't eat it in my gate, but eat it in your gate.
So which thou shalt eat it before the Lord?
The firstborn.
Well, in the Makom, he's talking about the place. He's talking about the temple.
Right.
He's talking about Jerusalem and the temple specifically there. Thou shalt eat it before the Lord thy God.
That's the animal's in good condition.
Oh, but I'm with you. Okay. So you can eat the unclean. You can eat the polluted one. Can be eaten within thy own gate.
Within your own gate.
Within the city.
Right. And you could be a priest. You could be a priest who is to be holy before God at all times.
Yeah.
Or you could be an Israelite that doesn't have to be holy before God because you're not in the temple. You're not going to do something with the temple. A priest can be holy all his life. He just can't see, oh, I'll be holy today, I'll be clean tomorrow. That didn't work. So that's what that refers to, yes. The Levite gets to eat it, too.
Yeah.
He's the clean one.
Yeah.
A sanctified one, I should say.
You had also brought up in times past that it's like when a person has to bury their dead and they touch them, which makes them unclean. And it came to him and asked, well, why can't we participate? It's not our fault that we had to take care of this family business, so to speak, that made us unclean. It's that kind of a situation, too. Even though they're ceremonially unclean, they can still go and participate.
That's correct. Yeah.